Blog Talk Radio.
Someday from the village to the city, I hope we'll find common ground. Hating each other and you know it's pity. We need a lifeline before we drown. A lifeline before we drown. Saying a prayer for a better tomorrow. So much anger, sadness, and sorrow. Truth and love is well worth the struggle. It won't come easy, but it's worth some good trouble. Oh, someday from the village to the city. The bullets keep flying and the gears keep turning. The seas keep rising and the fires keep burning. Oh, someday from the village to the city, I hope we'll find common ground. Hating each other and you know it's a pity.
I want to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio, Independent Music Showcase. This is our September the 4th, 2019 show, and our special guest tonight is Mootlo. Mootlo, are you with us?
Yeah, how's it going, man?
It's really good to hear your voice, man. I've been listening to your music, and I love it, and I'm just so excited to have you on the show tonight.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you on, and we need music like this, Mootlo. We need it really bad, and I hear a lot of different music going on right now, and we need positive music like this song, Lifeline. And my guess is Mootlo, and do you have a website if people wanted to know more about you, or Facebook or something?
Mootlosounds.com, M-U-T-L-U, sounds.com, okay. And Facebook /Mootlo, just and, you know, Instagram and Twitter handles are Mootlo Sounds as well.
Okay. Let's talk. We got, you know, I got a lot to talk about. But let's start off. let's start off with this song and why this song would be so important to this day, today, with all the things that are going on, Mootlo, that are happening in the world today. They're happening in, you're from Philadelphia. I'm from Columbus, Ohio, not too far away.
Oh, right.
All the things that are happening. Why did you write a positive song like this? Why do you think this song means so much right now and today?
You pretty much nailed it there. That was the whole gist of it. It was just that feeling of day in, day out frustration, anger, hopelessness that I think, you know, millions of us feel. And I wanted to write a song that was, a lot of times songs start like from a personal standpoint and then you put them together and then hopefully they resonate with people once you get it out there. And it was just about trying to look at that feeling of just the frustration and the anger and the hopelessness, and to try to write something that would feel hopeful and you know, create a feeling of solidarity. And I wrote it from a cathartic standpoint, with the hope that when people heard it, it would maybe, you know, make them feel a little more connected. And, you know, I should say that was sort of the arc of it overall, or that was kind of the inspiration of it overall. And then specifically the line, truth and love as well, where the struggle won't come easy, but it's worth some good trouble. That good trouble line, I was specifically inspired by John Lewis, you know, the civil rights hero and now congressman
right.
from Georgia 5. You know, because he's someone who embodies that lifelong fight for equality, for, you know, the fight for racial equality, social equality, economic equality. And he often talks about sort of how it's important for us to not get so caught up in this day in, day out sort of battle that we're all immersed in, and just try to see the big picture and to be hopeful. And, you know, be willing to get into that good trouble. That particular line, which came to tell the album, was, you know, be willing to speak out for what you believe and be willing to deal with some of the pushback or the confrontation to speak out on and to do what you think is right. So that was, it was a very specific inspiration and influence on that song. And, you know, it seems so far like it seems to be resonating with people, at least to some degree.
Oh, I think so. And I think it's a great thing, because question that I've asked people, Mutlu, a lot of times when I've interviewed musicians and artists, is what responsibility do you think an artist has in today's world? Because you got politicians, you have corporations, you have all these things going on and telling everybody all this stuff. And a lot of people are tuning that out, and they don't see anything behind it. But music
right.
and art always seems to resonate with people. And when I believe that, you know, you look at it, you know, when you go through school, you know, you got math and science and English and all these things, which you all, you know,
mm-hmm.
we all need to have that. But I think that the creative force, the art force, that is so important, and that it can reach people. Maybe they're not going to hear the preacher. Maybe they're not going to hear, you know, this politician, but they might listen to your music, or they might listen to Sting's music, or they might listen to, you know, just anybody's music. And those messages, I believe, can reach people that no one else can reach. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. Very well put. I mean, I think the thing about music is that in a way it can transcend. It's a medium that can transcend in perhaps a way that no politician could do through their whatever messaging, you know, or really there's just a lot of levels in which music can bridge a gap and communicate and connect to people more so than, say, a politician or any other medium can provide. You know, it's sort of like there's something about the melody and just the sort of intangible force that music is, that if you can connect to people in that way and then you put the lyrical message into it, maybe that's a way to sort of communicate and connect to people in a way that they wouldn't receive that same sort of message in any other way. So I think it's important. I think, you know, every artist is different, but I think if you feel inspired to speak out about sort of political and social issues, and I definitely feel that way, there's no better medium to try to get that message out there. So I agree, it's a powerful force. And yet the irony is, you know, I've had some people get angry at me, because before this record, I write a lot of things online just about my, you know, views and my frustrations and everything that I feel. And I've had some pushback from people who don't agree with me, you know, at times. And I thought about it, like, well, you know, I'm a musician at the end of the day. I shouldn't just be only, like, ranting online. I should be trying to put this into the music. And so that was a very deliberate push with this album. The whole record isn't political, but sort of the first half of it is, sort of the first trio of songs. And I felt like, well, let me try to put some of what I'm experiencing, some of what I'm seeing into the music, and maybe that'll be a stronger way than just sort of the divisive environment that we have on social media and the frustrations and sort of like the lack of trust we have in politicians, you know?
I totally agree. I think it's incredible. with the people that I've talked to, just a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to this one musician, and he said he really didn't like to get political in his music,
mm-hmm.
but he also has no problem saying what he feels is right and wrong in his music. But he doesn't like say, oh, I'm going to go this way or that way. I'm just going to put what I feel out there. And I think there's, you know, there's so many wonderful avenues that people can reach people, whether it's through, it can be like through your music, and it can be like, you know, somebody painting a mural or something on a wall, and you walk by
mm-hmm.
and you go, oh my God, that's exactly what I needed to see. And you can
right.
listen to the radio and all these people, Mootloo, it's like all these voices are coming at you, but you're thinking, man, that's just too much. You know, I got to hear something. And you boiled it down to truth and love. And I mean, how
right.
simple is that? I mean, it's,
yep.
it's probably the simplest thing that you could live by. Just tell people the truth and love them. Okay.
Right. Exactly.
How long?
And, yeah. And
yeah.
sometimes you have to appreciate that people aren't going to receive that, you know, you still have to put it out there though, you know?
Oh yeah. And I think it also what I'm seeing, you know, and I'm like you and like everybody else, I have tons of musical friends. I've been doing this since 2008. People from all over the world, they have all kinds of political views and things like that. I love every one of them. I don't agree with all the stuff that they say sometimes, but I think you
mm-hmm.
have to show them through example, Mulu. I think that's what it is. It's show them, you know, just don't say it,
right.
show them. Yeah. And if
right.
somebody needs
right.
them, yeah, I think it's so important.
I think that's tough, this environment too, where people sort of, you know, the online dialogue that happens is not often productive. It's not communication, you know? It's like it actually begets more confrontation than anything else. So that's something that like is difficult to sort of handle because we're all on social media. But it's easier to be in a room with someone and talk to them and maybe get somewhere than you know. And I'm guilty of just posting my thoughts, however angry they may be, and I do it because in some way it's cathartic, but I see in the big picture that we need more than that, you know?
Oh, yeah, and I agree 100% with you. I think it's one of those things where, you know, what's happening right now, you know, with all the gun violence and all the deaths, mm-hmm. I mean, it's time, in my opinion, who cares about debating it? We don't need to debate it any longer. We need to
right.
stop it.
Right.
And people yeah. say to me, well, I don't know how to do it. Well, we got to figure it out. I mean, we can't just go to bed and hopefully the next day we're going to wake up and all, you know, everybody's going to be peaceful. It's going to take work and it's going to take a lot of action. But I really appreciate that song and I appreciate what you're doing. I think sometimes artists take their talents and they go, and it's perfectly fine. They go different directions with it. But I think it's so honorable to me when people use their talents like you have, you know, to try to get something changed in the world. And it might be one song that one person could hear it, you know, and think, hey, you know, I think I can do that. I think it could be
yeah,
a little bit nicer.
That's the goal. That's what you hope. You know, you don't know when it's interesting because, like, while you're kind of creating the songs and writing and recording, you're kind of insulated from everything. And then it's always interesting when you actually put it out there to see what happens. But, like, this record, more than my previous ones, I was very kind of deliberate in every song, not even just the songs that are, you know, have the political and social commentary, but even on the other tunes. Like, I wanted every song to have a very specific purpose conceptually, lyrically, and sort of communicate a very specific thing that would hopefully resonate with people. And I got to give credit to my co-producer, Darius Amendolia, who also co-wrote a few of the songs with me. You know, we had a vision for how we wanted it to be, just sort of as far as the conceptual and especially the production approach. You know, that's not something I'd done before, but I feel like I had an idea of the kind of things I wanted to say, you know, beforehand. So when we actually got into working on it, it was all kind of laid out there. You know, we kind of had a roadmap for it.
Yeah, that's so important to get people, Mootloo, that are on the same page you are on, that believe the same things you believe as far as music and lyrics and Sometimes, you know, I've talked to people about how hard it is to get a producer to come in or a co-writer and to share your thoughts and your
mm-hmm.
vision. Did you have any trouble with Darius with that, or were you guys pretty much on the same wavelength?
We were on the same wavelength because he worked with me on my previous two EPs. And if anything, we took the experience of working on those and in our kind of strategy to prepare for this one. The previous two EPs, I think I'm really proud of, but I don't think we did quite the preparation that we did on this one. On this one, I mean, took a lot of time, and then we did a lot of pre-production to really almost like section by section of each song to know exactly what we wanted to do, what instrumentation. We were like very meticulous, so that when it came time to get in and track, we sort of had such a clear roadmap. And like I said, because we worked together a few times already, it's, you know, we really had a certain, we were just on the same wavelength. It was almost, you know, instinctive in some ways.
Did you work from your home studio or did you go into a professional studio? And now it's hard to even tell the difference. How did you attack that technically?
Well, we actually recorded it as we had the previous two EPs at Darius' studio in Orlando. So I went down there. We did a few different sets of sessions. He was actually up here when we sort of kind of mapped out a lot of the pre-production. But that was just like on, you know, voice memos and stuff like that. And then I made three different trips down there and we tracked it in that time. And then when the record was finished, you know, we sort of got all my parts done. Darius finished up his overdubs and then we brought it to Phil Niccolo. Here in Philadelphia to mix it, legendary engineer and mixer. And, you know, last few times we'd done the mixing on our own, Darius did a great job mixing the previous EPs, but we decided this time that we wanted to take it to someone sort of post-production-wise to try to take it to another level sonically, and Phil did an amazing job. He really just, I think, got the essence of what we were doing, and he just served the sort of the songs and the arrangement production. You know, he just kind of enhanced it sonically. But, you know, he didn't complicate it. And so I think, you know, it was a really cool process just from the songwriting to pre-production to tracking with Darius and then to mixing with Phil. It was it felt really seamless because I think we just there was such a clear vision, both like musically and even conceptually of like what we were going for.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the studio time, I mean, it's. To me, a lot of people, including me, Mulu, don't really understand what all goes into it, the planning and everything, the coordination, the timing and everything that goes into the recording part. And when you were explaining about the mixing, you know, gosh, a good sound man and a good person that can come in and mix it, those people are precious.
Yeah.
And they're as gifted as the musicians. And if you really don't believe that, you know, I mean – listen to some albums that they're good, but then after, you know, a professional person gets a hold of it, it just, wow, it's just amazing. So it's really, really cool that happened. I think what we'll do is we'll take a music break here and play Nothing in This World, in This Whole Wide World. Is this the one, I believe, that had John Oates on it, Nothing in This Whole Wide
yep.
World?
And that's
we'll talk about
just
that.
Read my mind. That's the one song that was actually not recorded. The other six were recorded with Darius, and that song, although I feel like it fit in like really comfortably and nicely with the rest of the record, we actually wrote and recorded that song a couple years ago, and until now it was only on my Bandcamp page, and then when it came time for this album, I put it into the record. You know, basically, it felt like it just fit in, you know, fit in with that latter part of the record. But that's a song, you know, I've had the great opportunity, the great honor over the years to tour a lot with Hall & Oates. And, you know, I got to know John well over the years. And we'd always talked about writing a tune together. Eventually it worked out a couple years back. I was in Nashville, got together with him. And that song came together in just a couple hours. I sort of had the basic chorus groove idea, but beyond that, it was kind of a clean slate. I know he'd be the perfect guy to collaborate with on that one. And we sat down, pulled it all together, really tightened up the melodies and the bridge, wrote all the lyrics. And we kind of like, just like the other tunes, there was a very specific vision that we had for that one. We kind of wanted to channel that 70s Philly soul thing, like a Spinners kind of vibe, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think it comes through. And then we did the tracking in we wrote it in Nashville. We then did the tracking in Brooklyn a few months later. And that included Shane Terrio, who was the guitarist from the Hall & Oates band, who also kind of co-produced the track with John, and also included Brian Dunn and Clyde Jones, drummer and bassist from the Hall & Oates band. So there's a real Hall & Oates connection on that song. And then eventually we got the track together, and then I went back and cut the final vocals with John in Nashville. And that was really fun, just working with him. You know, we played so many shows together. Whenever I've opened some of his solo shows too, and I always sit in and guest with him. So we had just such a great camaraderie with the vocals, and you know, he really, I think, pulled out a good emotional performance out of me. And then we also you know, really worked out those vocal harmonies and arrangements and stuff together. So that song was that one I'm really just really proud of. It's kind of it's a homage to the Philly sound. And, of course, you know, Hall & Oates are among my musical heroes, so I get to work with them all these years. And they get to put that song together. You know, it really represents just sort of that whole connection, that whole Philly thing. And, you know, I've learned so much from both Daryl and John musically, and just about how to go about this career and to be in music. So that song is important on a lot of levels. But the nice thing was, like, you don't know necessarily sometimes, you know, the other six songs we recorded, you know, in a very specific time frame, in a very specific way. But at the end, it just worked out nicely that that song kind of fit in there. And I felt like it's sort of that latter part of the record that's a little more personal as a few of the love songs. It felt like it belonged with that that other collection.
Well, that's cool. Let's play it. This is Mootloo, and your latest album is Good Trouble. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
And that's a great setup, man. I love to talk about Philly soul music, and we'll talk that when we come back. And don't go anywhere. You're listening to John Talk Radio Independent Music Showcase. I'm your host, John Darlington. We'll be right back after this.
Oh, my friends tell me that's just no good. I know better, and it's understood that there ain't no doubt about it. Ain't no doubt about it. I know you're the only one for me. But when it feels so right, it was meant to be. Ain't no doubt about it.
Loving you.
And you're back on John Talk Radio. I'm your host, John Darlington. We have Mulu with us. You can go on his website, mulusounds.com. His latest release is Good Trouble. And we just heard Nothing in This Whole Wide World. And that's a really – I love that song, Mulu. Who's playing bass on that? Because they do a pretty good job on that.
Clyde Jones, who's in the Hall & Oates band and was previously in Average White Band. He's an amazing musician. Just his feel and the tone is incredible.
I play bass. Not that good. I've been playing for a while, but that's the first thing I hear in every song. And I just if it reaches out, I think, oh yeah, that's pretty awesome. So let's get some background information. I know that the listeners always like that. One of the reasons, Mulu, I do this show is kind of to give background. People hear music and they hear things on the radio, get to know the people that make it a little bit. And I think that makes the music more personal. And it always works with me. I always tell the story that, one of the first interviews I heard way back when I was walking the dog, and I wasn't a fan of Meatloaf, but I heard a really good interview on him. And it turned everything around for me with his music. I looked at his music completely different after the interview.
Right.
And before, I thought, well, it's good, and I just don't quite get it. But after I listened to him talk about it, I thought, man, I appreciate it. And so that's what I want to do. If you could kind of give us a little background on your growing up and how that music and art affected you growing up. And I always think that's a great way to kind of tie it in. What kind of maybe your family life and things that how music and art, kind of helped you along and or had a part in your life.
Yeah, I think it's always been there for me. I didn't really actually start to pursue it more full on till I was a little older, but I always had a sense that I could sing. My folks, they're definitely music fans and had kind of an interesting eclectic collection. They're Turkish, so I sort of got exposed to some of Turkish music through my parents, and then a lot of the classic, Beatles and Randy Newman. And I got into the Grateful Dead, I remember, when I was in high school. And then really, though, the thing that hooked me was soul music, hearing artists like Stevie Wonder and Bill Withers and Al Green. And that once I really got into soul music, that's when I knew it's what I want to do. But I didn't really get into it till I was a little bit older. When I was in high school, I was in a few musicals, and that was kind of my first experience of performing live and just the connection that you can have with an audience live. At that point, I sort of knew right away I wanted to do it. And then a little bit in high school, and more so in college, I started picking up the guitar. And as soon as I learned a few chords, I started writing songs and gradually started going to open mics and so on. And then as soon as I was done college, I was like, that's it. That's all I just pursued it full on. But for me, it was a revelation, once that thing of creating something from nothing, of writing a song and you sit down with the guitar, you got a few chords, and then you get inspired, you hear a melody, you write a lyric. I think once I connected to that experience, that was just a turning point for me, just in life in general, just that act of creation. And then equally the ability to go and just perform for people, that connection that can happen, that's in a way, in an even stronger way, is sort of the deepest connection I have to it.
Do you remember, Mulu, when you did your first sing in front of people, or your first concert, or the first time you were performing in front of people? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I guess the first time I was out really just singing lead on something and in front of an audience was like this thing called Broadway Review. I was in 10th grade, and it was like scenes from different shows, and I had a song from Oklahoma, and I was wearing like a cowboy outfit, and it was kind of the whole thing. I had sort of like the sort of a cowboy accent, and the whole thing was kind of absurd. I kind of hammed it up and got kind of silly with it. But then, the music, the melodies of Rodgers and Hammerstein are amazing. And just that feeling of kind of being a showman, being in that character, but also then just singing that song. What was the tune? Now I'm blanking on what it's called, but, so there's a bright golden haze on the meadow. It's that one. It's one of the big songs.
Yeah. I can't think of the name of it either.
But
I know,
that,
I know
that's
a good song.
It's a great song. Those are just amazing. Yeah, you know, that's a Tin Pan Alley era of writing. That's so incredible. But I remember that moment. I remember that connection to the audience, and that was magic to me. Just to be able to do that, and I felt like very comfortable with it. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah.
I didn't even have. I remember not feeling that nervous. It just felt like second nature to me. Then it took me a while to connect to, like, okay, I can actually write my own music and perform. But that was the first really tangible connection to, wow, like, this is what it's like to be in front of an audience.
Yeah, what was your family's reaction to that with you performing and then wanting to go into music for a career?
Well, you know, they're pragmatists. They're both engineers. So they were always supportive, but a little concerned initially. Yep. And understandably so. It's it's a hard business. I mean, it's totally understandable. But I think once they started to see that I, you know, was doing it for real, once they started touring and they saw I could actually, you know, make money from it and make a living from it, saw that I was actually making
yep.
progress with it, then they came around and now they're just all in. I mean, they would never, if I even, like, occasionally would have thought of, like, oh, man, this business is too much, I got to walk away, they wouldn't allow it, probably. They're all in on it now. But early on, understandably, they were concerned because, you know, this is just, it's a fair-weathered business. It's, you got to develop a thick skin, and it's not the easiest way to make a living, you know. You have to find your own way into doing that however you can. So they're definitely very supportive.
Yeah, and that's really cool because I've talked to so many people, Mulu, that have had the same thing where it's like, you know, the parents want the best for them and they're not necessarily sure if that's the path they should go or not, but they're always supportive.
Right.
And yeah, and I think it's what would your advice be to young musicians that are listening right now or artists that are listening that want to pursue a career? What would you say some of the foundation things that would help them, that helped you to, you know, get on the road and do the things that you've done? What are some of the advice that you would give the up and budding musicians?
I think to, no matter what, never lose that connection to the love and simple joy of making music, because once it becomes your means of making a living, or once it, you know, money and the business are involved, and then that joy can be threatened by all those outside forces. And I think this is something I struggle with. You have to find a way to sort of compartmentalize and know when to switch all that off and find your ability, reconnect to your ability to just connect to the love of doing it, whether it's performing, writing a song, whatever, just picking up the guitar or playing the piano, whatever it is. That simple connection to it can be threatened by all the other perils of the business. So to always stay tuned into that, and also just accept that it's never going to be easy. I mean, you're never, even artists who are more successful that I've known, you know, there's peaks and valleys to their careers. You know, some records do better than others, some do better than others. It's always a roller coaster. It's always going to be that way, no matter what level you're at. And you know, the other thing is, like, just the most important thing is the human connection. You know, your connection to other artists, your connection to other songwriters, other musicians, people within the business who are good people who really do want to help you succeed and want to support what you're doing. You know, I mean, for me, I've been so lucky because for years I've had the opportunity to tour extensively with and collaborate extensively with Daryl Hall and John Oates, and also my friend Amos Lee. I mean, those are the three artists that I've spent more time working with than anyone else. And being around them, that I've just learned so much, and I've had so many opportunities and exposure just from touring with them. And that connects me, like, relationships matter, you know, like in any business. Your connection to other artists, your connection to fans. You know, in this day and age, you don't need all the middle people. You can get right to your fans. And you know, I'm a grassroots artist, DIY. You know, I build fans one show at a time for the most part. That human connection, that's the most important thing. That really the business, if you have that going, if you stay tuned into that, the sort of bigger corporate industry can't really take that from you.
Yeah, that's a great point. When I ask a lot of musicians, Mutlu, why they do what they do, most of them say that's the reaction they get from their fans and from the people listening to their music. And was that a do you remember when you, like, the first time you were playing in front of an audience and people were singing your songs back to you? Do you remember that? Because that seems to be a big moment for a lot of artists.
Yeah, I remember. I remember, like, the first EP I put out. The first time I had that specific experience, that's a big moment when the first time, you know, you put something out and you go to a show and you realize that people are, you know the tune. They're coming, they're excited to hear you sing it and want to engage with you on it. And you hear people sing along or sing back. That's a force of nature, that thing, whatever that is. Again, it comes back to the thing of, like, you create something from nothing and then it becomes something meaningful. To people, you know, I've had that. Not every song does that, but occasionally you write a song that does that, and people come, you know, people come up to me and show and say, "Oh, you know, this song. I was listening to this song when, you know, when I was going through a really difficult time, and it helped me through. I'd listen to it every morning. Something like those kind of things. Like, wow, it's okay. This is once you put it out there, it's beyond you. It's for everyone to hopefully connect to and, you know, create some kind of connection and meaning for them. And that's just an amazing thing, because you're like a conduit to create the song, and then it becomes part of other people's lives.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that, about the creation of the songs, Mutlu, and how you approach the songwriting process, because I've also asked that question to a lot of people, and mostly I get so many different answers. Music first, lyrics first. I get people say, well, the song comes to me in its entirety. It just drops into my consciousness. I just listen to it. And I think it's so cool for people that have that gift, you know, to be able to share that with the world. So what's your songwriting process?
I would say for me, I mean, it does vary song to song. For me, it usually starts with a melody, and then maybe some kind of simple catchphrase that somehow connects to that melody. And that's usually sort of the it's rare that I start with the lyric. It's almost always, you know, melody is king. Somehow that's the aspect of it that comes most readily to me. But, you know, it depends. Sometimes that could be from sitting at the guitar, sitting at the piano, and I hear something. Sometimes it's just a cappella. I'm walking around and some melody pops in my head. I put it onto the voice memo, and occasionally what's happened is I've actually dreamed something. Like, in my dream, I hear the melody.
Isn't that cool? That's awesome.
That's amazing. That's happened to me a number of times. I dream the melody, and then I wake up, and I sing it into the voice memo, like, just in whatever state I can. And then if I wake up later and listen, it's something, you know, more often than not, it's something. If that's how it comes to you, it's almost like your subconscious is writing. And then, you know, the lyrics are kind of always the part that, not in every situation, but usually I'll sort of sculpt kind of the melody and the composition, and then the lyrics sort of come to me. But, you know, it also depends, because I have one way of doing it that's a little more frantic or sort of scattered or piecemeal when I'm writing on my own. Like, I'll write in bits and pieces. But then I've also done a good amount of co-writing. And the thing with co-writing that can be great is you can be a little more organized in the way you attack it. Like for example, the song I wrote with John Oates, you know, I sort of had the basic chorus and groove, but it was a clean slate beyond that. And he came in and just brought such great ideas to really take it from this, like, raw idea into, like, a fully fleshed out song. And, you know, those are the best co-writes, where you just bang something out in an hour or two because you're on the same wavelength. And that can actually be a lot more effective. You know, Darius and I write really well together. Like, a couple of these songs, like, for example, Not Escapable was something we had. He had kind of had a little groove, and we had kind of put a little chorus melody to it, and the song sort of sat there for a while. And then for a matter of months, actually, then we came back to it. And this time we had an idea for the lyrics, because we were both talking about that song, Not Escapable, is more about the actually just addressing that anger, that frustration, not the hopefulness in it, but just the feeling of that. And so we already had the sort of canvas of it musically, and we sat down and just went back and forth and wrote the lyrics. So it can come together in so many different ways. But I'll say this: a lot of times, I say 9 times out of 10, maybe occasionally you're wrong. I say 9 times out of 10, you know if it's something, if there's some kind of magic in it or if it's working. And the better way to test it is to go play it live. You know, that's when you really get the feedback. But there's no one way to it, but it's like you always kind of have an instinct of when it's really, when there's something going on, it's got a chance to connect with people.
Yeah, I read an article, Jeff Tweedy from Wilco. He made it seem pretty good. He said when his songwriting, he said you should, as an artist, you should work really hard. You should practice. You should practice your instrument. You should study music and life and just absorb everything into your heart. And he said, let it go into your subconscious. And, you know, whether you play guitar or whatever you do, let it all go into your subconscious. And then your subconscious will release that into a song. And it'll come out as a conscious song. And I thought, man, that's a pretty cool way of putting it. I've never
really
thought of it
that
way. Yeah.
You know, I really like that. And, you know, is that the dog in the background? Who wants to get in?
That's, yeah, that's Cat Stevens, our dog, barking at his reflection in the window.
Oh, that's a great name, too, Cat Stevens.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about
a
great songwriter. No, but I love what that thing that Jeff Tweedy said, because I think that's true, because I think I'll say a few of my best songs were written in that way I was talking about, where I dreamed it. For example, there's a song called Gone Forever that was from my last EP. That is a song, it's a song basically about dealing with grief. I wrote it after a good friend of mine passed away, the late, great Dante Bucci, who was a great musician, great percussion player. And I sort of dreamed the melody. You know, I was just sort of processing losing such a dear friend, and I dreamed that melody, that the lyric is like, these are the days that are gone forever, like the thing of gone forever, of losing someone, never, you know, being able to be around them and spend time with them again. I dreamed that. So, you know, in that way, the grief came through the subconscious, and it actually got into my dream. And then, I mean, that song sort of wrote itself after that. But I love that thing of, I don't think, like, because I'm very manic with writing. I may not write anything for a few months, and then in a week, 3 or 4 songs will come together.
Yeah,
you know,
that
very
creative, it just
yeah,
flows.
Yeah, that burst. Yeah, and then at that moment, you're just grooving, you're just rolling. And then you step away, because I also, the thing you said about, that Jeff Tweedy said is like, the thing of, I don't know that songs just come from immersing yourself in more songs, you know. I think they come from life, they come from your experience, and you can't necessarily, I know there are professional songwriters who can will a song and maybe even write a hit that way, but I think the best songs are the ones that come about a little more naturally. I don't know, you're in a situation, something comes to you, it pops into your head, or you have a conversation with someone and something about that conversation moves you, or you just, whatever experience you have. I think the deepest songs that resonate with people the most come in that sort of, like, you know, that you're just channeling something almost.
Yeah, and they can feel that. And it's that connection that you have with that song, because it comes from their heart. And if it touches your heart, man, there's that connection that, like you said, you wrote that song about your friend that passed. And I would imagine, Mutlu, every time you play that song or, you know, perform it, you remember him.
Yeah.
And that brings that back and keeps him alive. And that's just a special thing. I don't know if there's any way we can break it down, because the music is so creative. And like I've said before, it's like this ocean. There's no end to it. You can't see the end of it. Creativity is – people are creating things all the time, which is just magical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not – yeah, that's why, you know, I'm such a big fan of art and the music industry and what's going on, and man, it's just great. But let's play one more song here. Let's play Not Escapable. You already talked about that a little bit. I think, would you like to say anything else before we play that?
Yeah, that's a song. The first three songs of the record were kind of like a political social commentary trilogy. Lifeline was, like we discussed, the more upbeat sort of aspect of that, or the hopefulness. Not Escapable is about just being in the grind, and man, just just the, actually the feeling of exhaustion and hope and hopelessness and just the anger and just feel like it's not escapable. This is never going to end. We're not going to get past this, that feeling. And then the third song, 95 to 5, sort of to complete that trilogy, is a song that's talking a little bit more about the income gap and growing wealth inequality and, you know, income inequality that I think is not always – it's not always the hot button issue, but it tends to sort of be the thing underneath the surface that's driving a lot of the issues that are dividing us and that are causing such, you know, confrontation politically and culturally. So, but this second song is about just that feeling of angst and frustration. And we tried to put that sort of into this sort of like laid back reggae groove.
My guest is Mulu, and you can go on his website, mulusounds.com. We'll be right back to complete the interview with Mulu right after this. Back on John Talk Radio. I'm your host, John Darlington. We have Mulu with us tonight talking about his latest album, Good Trouble. And we just heard Not Escapable. That's a really cool song. So, Mulu, before our interview's over, like, what gigs do you have? Do you have like projects or concerts or gigs or things that you would like to tell the audience about?
Yeah, I'm sort of kind of in the home stretch, I guess that's where I was just on the road all this past month. But I got some cool shows coming up. this month as well. Actually, this Sunday I'll be playing at Daryl's House, which is Daryl Hall's venue in upstate New York,
right.
In Pauling, in Hudson Valley, New York. That's a great venue. I've played there a bunch of times. Always a lot of fun. And then I'll be doing a hometown show September 13th at World Cafe Live here in Philly. And then September 26th, I'll be opening for Hall & Oates in Little Rock, Arkansas, at the Verizon Arena. And that's always just an awesome experience to open for them. And then
wow.
kind of wrapping up the tour schedule in at the Paradiso in Amsterdam, at the smaller upstairs stage they have there. You know, I was just there with my friend Amos Lee in the main hall a few months back, opened three nights for him. So they decided to bring me back for to do. They have sort of a smaller upstairs stage. So I'm going to do kind of my first ever headlining show there in Amsterdam. So I figured that was a cool way to kind of finish off the tour, you know.
Wow. That sounds awesome. I'm really, hope the best for you. I'd love to hear you sometime if you ever come around the Columbus, Cincinnati,
yeah.
Cleveland area. Yeah, that would be awesome.
I would love to. I've only been through there I opened for Hall & Oates there. What's the big shed there? It's like next to sort of the, it's like sort of an outdoor amphitheater. It's near sort of the ballpark,
oh.
I think.
Yeah, it's they changed the name of it like all the time. It used
okay.
to be. I know exactly where you mean. Yeah, it's a great place to hear a concert.
It's a really cool,
gosh.
Like kind of smaller amphitheater. It's I remember
yeah.
it being an awesome show.
Yeah, it's
and then
Promo
I remember
West
one of
my minor
Promo West, exactly. Promo, it's
yeah.
their room, it's their venue. I forget the name
yep.
of the place, but it's one of those places that changed the name. But it's a great, like, it's a really nice, like, feels intimate, you know, for an amphitheater.
Oh yeah. Cool.
Yeah, but I'd love to get back there to do my own show. So some markets, you know, I've been through a lot of the cities as an opener a few times, but it's only some markets that I've at this point got to getting back on my own as a headliner. So, you know, you just build it one step at a time. But I'm trying to retrace my steps through as many cities as I can. So hopefully I'll be out there for too long.
Yeah, that would be great. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing, Mulu, that I maybe have missed, something you'd like to tell the listening audience?
No, man, this was great. I think we covered a lot of great bases, and I think we covered some good ground here. So this is great.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on. I love your music, and I wish you the best. And we'll definitely have to keep in touch when you get that new album out. And
absolutely.
Everybody's always working on new stuff, so I'm sure you are. So, thank you.
Probably this winter I'll start putting new tunes together. So, you know, thank you so much for having me on, man. This was great.
Well, it's been great to have you on. And I want to thank the listeners that have kept this show going since 2008 and for supporting the independent artists. So thank you so much, and everybody have a really good evening, and we'll talk to you later.
A downtown luxury, everyone bleeds the same, but the medicine ain't free. Government divide and profits from us all, but all they wanna do is build themselves a wall. And this gridlock from 95 to the 5, trying to stay.
Now,
na 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 na.
the times are hard, when you feel you walk alone, just hold on. You're my world, and you know that you will be always dear to me, oh my girl. Oh my girl, oh my girl, oh my girl. When you feel you walk alone, just hold.